Ladies and gentlemen, drivers, gig workers, and everyone in between, welcome to This Week in Rideshare Podcast. I'm your host, Jared Hoffa. It is Friday, March 22nd, and this week in Rideshare, we got strikes, companies, and facts. And as always, Legal Rideshare breaks it down. And of course, from Legal Rideshare, I'm joined by the co-founder and lead attorney, Brian Gruning. Brian, happy Friday.
Happy Friday, Jared. Great to be back.
Yeah, we're doing something a little different today, obviously. We're on camera, which is pretty awesome. We're kind of mixing it up. We're upgrading now. We've expanded.
You know, the firm is doing really well, so we can afford to do things like, audio-visual entertainment.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So yeah, we're going to talk about the three main topics. We're going to obviously jump right into this. It's yet again another busy week. A lot of focus on Minneapolis, but we'll get there. So we're going to start with Louisville drivers go on strike. Let me jump to my old school notes here. So this happened in Kentucky. And this is from Spectrum News, and they reported around 60 drivers went on strike. Starting at the Louisville Muhammad Ali International Airport. They said they chose the location because they don't make enough money on rides from the airport to downtown hotels. Now, Lyft responded and said, drivers were earned 70% or more of the rider payments each week. And of course, the drivers responded and said, no, we're not. We're not making 70%. Brian, why do you think that they keep doing this? Where they throw this huge number out and then say, hey, this is what drivers make? Because every single time the drivers respond and say, no, we don't. We don't make this.
Well, there's a bait and switch going on here. Every time that they up those numbers, they say, come out and drive for us. You're going to make 70% of the fare. They get more drivers onboarded. They get excitement within the driving community. And often for a period of time, drivers are reporting that they're making good money. And then it seems as soon as they get comfortable with those fares, there's some change in the algorithm or the payment structure where drivers are actually walking away with less. We're going to talk about this in a little bit, but one of the biggest issues with the structure of Uber, Lyft, and all the other gig companies is that the drivers really don't have a true sense as to what they're going to make or an expectation as to how much they're going to earn. The companies are the ones who control all the information, all the data, and the drivers are left to rely on those companies to provide what they say they're going to provide and to pay a fair, livable wage. What we're seeing in Louisville is that drivers are seeing their money and pay go down once again, which has happened time and time and time over the last decade, and they're standing up for themselves. And I have to respect that they're coming together. They're using their collective voice to try to demand change, to try to demand better. And hopefully they're successful, because the only way that there's going to be a positive outcome for the drivers is if they work together. One voice obviously is not as strong or as loud as many. So I support what the drivers in Louisville are doing. And I hope that they see good results from it.
Yeah, I think something that isn't really talked about a lot, and this is important, dive into this, is that a lot of times when you talk about these drivers going on strike, we don't ever talk about, how long these drivers have been driving. I think there's kind of this assumption that it's like a new driver that signed up and says, hey, this is unfair, and now I'm going to go on strike. But even in this article, it says that this one driver had been working for Uber and Lyft for over 6.5 years, so almost since the beginning. And this is the first time that they've ever decided to strike. So I think that really is indicating that, look, these aren't new drivers. These aren't people who don't know what to expect. These are people who've helped build these companies from start to billion-dollar industry. And they're just saying, hey, look, I've been a team player. I just want my fair share. And I think that's not covered a lot, that these aren't rookie drivers. These aren't new people. These are people who understand how the industry works. And these companies need these people.
Right. And enough is enough. So they've seen how the pay has ebbed and flowed, how it's gone up and down. And when drivers first started back in the mid 2010s, like the pay was pretty good. People were able to support themselves and they were making life transitions. They were leaving more traditional jobs for rideshare work because they saw that the money was sufficient. They liked how the hours worked, that they could choose when they worked. But the rules keep changing, the pay structure keeps changing, and ultimately we see the bottom line for the driver going down and down and down. And what these drivers in Louisville are doing is they're saying we can't continue to take these large percentages out of our bottom line for the benefit of the company. It needs to be fair. It needs to be, established. We need to know what we're going to make. And that's the only way that we're going to continue doing the job. And these companies really need the drivers, or else there's not really a service to provide.
Right. Well, what's a great transition into the second topic, talking about there's not a service to provide, as we've discussed the last couple of weeks here. Uber leaves, or is planning to leave, and companies are stepping up. So with Uber planning to leave, other rideshare companies are stepping up, and this is from KRE11, and they reported that rideshare companies Uber and Lyft said they will leave Minneapolis on May 1st if a new ordinance takes effect. But several companies are now saying, look, we're ready to step up if Uber and Lyft decide to make good on their promise. Steve Wright, the founder and CEO of Rides, who we actually know pretty well, said their rideshare company can now be found in 20 cities across the country. They started in Austin, Texas. And I know that they are talking about entering the Minneapolis market. There's also Joshua Sear, founder and CEO of Empower. He said their main market is in Washington, D.C. But they also provide service to drivers in Winston and Greensboro, North Carolina, and are beta testing in New York City. Now, it also says to date, no new company has submitted an application for a TNC license. Once the city of Minneapolis receives a license application from a TNC, it takes about 2 to 6 weeks for approval. Hill said any new company will obviously need to follow the city's permits and licensing. So, yet again, Brian, we discussed this. I feel like every time we talk about this, we're always a week ahead of what the news says. We said, if they leave, companies are going to step up. We're seeing they're already, two, three, four. They're like, yeah, we are ready to go. We're already in a bunch of counties and countries, so let's do it.
Yeah, I think one of the things that Uber and Lyft are discounting is how many companies are ready to step up and take their place. When they threaten to leave a market like Minneapolis, companies like Rides and others are salivating, saying, this is a huge opportunity for us. We have our platform ready to go. We have a reputation with drivers. We've been marketing across the country. When they apply to serve the Minneapolis community, there's going to be lines of drivers ready to sign up, get onboarded, and start servicing that community. So this threat that Uber and Lyft are making, we're going to pack up our bags and go, is based on an assumption that the community is not going to have rideshare, that all of a sudden civilians are going to say to their, to the politicians, what did you do? We can't get from point A to point B. We don't have access to get to school, to get to work, to go grocery shopping. That's simply not the case. There are dozens of companies around the country who will be heading to Minneapolis ready to go. And this 2 to 6 weeks, that puts us right at about May 1st. They're going to be ready if Uber and Lyft step away. So I'm still skeptical that there's not going to be a change in course by the big companies and they end up staying. But if they do, they better get ready to share the market because when they come back, there's going to be other companies that have established themselves as good services, ready to go, providing exactly what the community needs.
Yeah, we discussed this before. This happened in Austin when they left, and then Ride Austin took over. Yeah, we as we know, yes, Uber and Lyft did come back, but I guarantee their market share is not as high as it was. I think people really liked the Ride Austin service. They said it was better cars, better everything. Yes, it was smaller to begin with, but I think a lot of people are still using it there. At least last time I was there, they were. So, like you said, if they leave, I think they're going to lose pieces of that pie that they're already complaining about anyways. So, I just, take your ball and go home. It's not really a smart strategy for them because apparently they don't know how America works. This is a market economy. People like if there's an opportunity and a need, someone will fill it. Just like you said, they will not hesitate and they will jump at it.
Right. And you look at a city like Minneapolis, it's a big city. You know, I don't know the exact percentages, but you've got to think that Uber and Lyft have about a 99% market share of the ride share in that industry or in that area. If they leave and another company comes up and starts providing services, and then Uber and Lyft decide that they want to come back, all of a sudden that 99% of the market share is down to 89%. You know, they can come back and they can capture most of it again, but they've given some breathing room to a smaller company who's going to take a significant percentage of their earnings. And as you just said, is it worth it to give those smaller companies an opportunity to take that piece of the pie? Or do you just adapt to what the city council has implemented, take your medicine, and continue to dominate like they have? I personally think the better business model for them is to pay the drivers what the city is requiring that they pay and keep their position. Why go through this runaround where you're going to lose valuable market share along the way? But, you know, good for the smaller companies who are going to have a real opportunity to take that market share away.
Yeah, 100%. And actually, this kind of really is a great transition into the final topic today, which is about, you know, what's happening in Minneapolis. And this is a different article. Literally, it's the article's called 15 Facts About Minimum Wage. And this is written by two labor-friendly economists. So, you know, with the win in Minnesota for these drivers, some reporters are breaking down what they are calling facts. Now, Brian, I just want you to weigh in on these, because, again, this is a kind of a different side than a lot of the other articles that are written about what's happening. This is what they're calling the truths, or what you need to know about this minimum wage in Minneapolis. So the first thing they say, or one of the big things they say is, and we've heard this before, you know, Uber and Lyft drivers earn an average of $30.27 per hour. I know you can't nail it completely down, but is that realistic? Is that what's happening out there?
So I think what we're seeing in this report is the other side to what the city council based their decision on. So in Minneapolis, the city council decided that workers were not making enough money. They were not being supported in the right way, and they needed to step in and provide a floor for them to make a livable wage. This report is saying, wait, there's a lot more money coming into Uber and Lyft drivers than people realize. And this pegs it at, you know, $30 and change per hour. I think what we're learning is the numbers are extremely convoluted, that the only entities that really know how much the driving community as a whole is making are the rideshare companies. So Uber and Lyft hold all the information, and these economists are coming in and trying to sort through the data to come up with their best guess. There's obviously going to be a pro-worker side. There's obviously going to be a pro-business side. And I think that the numbers can be skewed to support either position. Anecdotally, from talking with driver after driver after driver, I find it very hard to believe that the number is anywhere near $30 per hour. I think it's much closer to minimum wage, if not below minimum wage, that the average driver is working or is making, particularly after accounting for things like expenses, gas, maintenance on the vehicle, internet connection, you know, cell phone service to support the app. All of these things need to be taken into account. What I would really like to see happen is an independent, perhaps even government-sanctioned entity come in and look at the data that Uber and Lyft have and try to really figure out state by state, market by market, what drivers are earning, and if their earnings are in compliance with the state and federal laws. So the only way that this is ever going to be sorted out is through that sort of independent review. And until then, people are going to have to make decisions. Are we more likely to support the working class person, or are we more likely to support the big business? And whichever side you fall down on, I think you're going to be able to make an argument for.
Right. I think there's a lot of he said, she said in this report, just like you said, and it's not an independent report. You know, they do say something that is interesting, although I still don't think it's going to be as big of an issue if these other companies are ready. You know, they mentioned that there's at least 10,000 app-based drivers in Minnesota. And one of the things that they say about this article, but again, I don't think this is a good answer, but they said, look, these other companies, these new companies are going to struggle to scale up if Uber and Lyft leave. Now, I can see both sides of that, especially from a technical standpoint. But a lot of these companies are operating in multiple cities. So, you know, 10,000 drivers, yeah, that's a lot for one location, but they're probably already on 10,000, at least 10,000 in even more complex areas across the country. So I don't think that's, I don't think this is a this negative that they're trying to push while Uber and Lyft are the only two that can make this tech. It's not, I mean, I don't know if you remember this, but a couple years ago, I believe it was the former president of Google or CEO of Google. He said, look, Uber, the technology is not, it's nothing. You know, it's really simple. You know, it's right. just a taxi service. So I don't think that they had this golden goose of, as everyone thinks they do.
Yeah, they dominate the market because they were first and they marketed really well and they, you know, stormed into various cities. And look, they've provided a service that has been proven to be needed. The taxi industry was antiquated. We needed someone to come in and disrupt the way that we move around. But Uber and Lyft are not the only ones with the technology. We see dozens of other companies out there. And I agree with you. I think that onboarding is going to take some time. There might be a period of weeks or even months where drivers are signing up and background checks are being done. But these are companies that are established. It's not like you and I are developing an app to try to fill the market in Minneapolis. These are companies that already have apps built that have deployed them around the country and onboarded drivers around the country. And all that we're going to see happen is that they add Minneapolis to their repertoire. They're adding them to their portfolio. So yes, perhaps it won't be instantaneous. I don't think that you're going to get a ride on one of the smaller services tomorrow in Minneapolis, but by May 1st, I bet you can.
Yeah, and of course, you know, simultaneously as and I'm sure they're already doing it, to be honest, like rides and power, you know, they're not just going to wait till May 1st and then start figuring out how to make it work. I guarantee they're already in talks about how to onboard, you know, passengers, what the systems are going to be like. They're probably already upgrading their systems. So again, it's this fear of like, oh, you know, we have to just let Uber be Uber. Well, no, you just have to adapt. And again, Uber and Lyft don't seem to want to do that. And other people will. And they will take the helm. And it'll be good for everyone, honestly.
And you know what these other companies are going to do is they're going to take proactive steps to pay drivers, to set minimum wages, to be clear and unambiguous as to how the payment structure works. So all of these issues that are laid out in this report in terms of do they make under minimum wage, do they make over $30 an hour, a lot of these companies are solving that ambiguity by just laying it out there. This is what you're going to earn per trip. This is what you're going to earn, per mile or however they're setting up their structure. It's all out on the table. So drivers can make a good decision for themselves. Is this an amount of money that's worth it for me to get behind the wheel, to risk my safety, to take up my time, to pass up other opportunities for earnings? And if they decide that it is, then they get out and they do the job.
Right. So, yeah, you know, again, as I always say, time will tell on this. I think ultimately it'll be a good thing. We're just going to have to really see how this progresses. And really, May 1st is going to be the answer. You know, are they gone? Are they actually going to do it? And then I think we're going to discuss what happens next. But I don't think it's cut and dry. I don't think the sky is falling. I think people will be fine. And life will go on. And you will have a rideshare service of some sort. So before we head off into the weekend, though, Brian, of course, I want to give you a final word here before we head off in the weekend.
Yeah, we always like to remind everyone that Legal Rideshare is available for free consultations should you ever find yourself in an accident or injured on the job. Please reach out to us immediately. These types of claims and cases do not get better over time. So, you know, you can reach out to us at LegalRideshare.com. All of our contact information is right there. And we are happy to give you the information that you need to set a foundation for a strong case, which means money in your pocket at the end of the day.
Awesome. Thank you, Brian. And as I always like to say, That is the end of This Week in Rideshare. See you next week.